Hello and welcome to The Ordinary Knitter, the podcast that's mostly about the projects. Hello and welcome to episode 11. This week, Worldwide Knit in Public Day, what to make for a few days away in August, an interview with Alison from my knitting group, a newsletter I've been receiving that's slightly spooky, and those babies have finally started to arrive. Hello! So, did you succeed in doing anything for Worldwide Knit in Public Day? Judging by my Instagram and Twitter accounts, that's The Ordinary Knitter on Instagram and The Ord Knitter on Twitter, an awful lot of people managed to do a great deal on Worldwide Knit in Public Day. Sadly, I didn't. Well, I say that. That's not actually strictly true. I was out in public during the day. On the Saturday, they let me out. I had a long ago agreed to run the school cake stall at the school fair. So that was great fun, but it's one of those where from the moment you arrive until the moment you leave, about 6 hours later, your feet don't touch the ground. Plus, we had to nip out in the morning before that, so I achieved no knitting in public. But as I had suggested I might do, I did succeed in dragging my husband down to the pub on Saturday night. He and both my children came along and helped, so I think he, just as much as I did, fancied just relaxing like a grown-up in the pub. It's not something we do a great deal, which makes it all the nicer when we do. I took my knitting with me. I was really determined to achieve something for Worldwide Knit in Public Day. So we drove down, which is a little bit self-indulgent, but we were rather footsore after our day standing at the stall. So as we walked past the window of the pub to go in, we realised people were frantically waving at us, and there in the pub was my daughter's best friend, who she doesn't go to school with, so we don't see them that often. She was out with her family having a birthday meal, so that was really nice, and it's such a coincidence because they don't live in our village, and that it should be that night, and we hardly ever go to the pub, and three bags full. So that was really nice. Unfortunately for them, a party of 45 had come in just before them and ordered, so they were happy to kill a bit of time chatting. So by the time we had a chat to them, we got our drinks, went and sat outside, and I got the knitting out. And from where we were sitting, I could just see them. We were outside, but I could just see them through the edge of one of the bay windows of the pub. So my husband and I were nattering away, and I was working on the cuff of these socks, and then the family had finished their meal and they were just leaving, and my daughter's friend's dad came out, and he came to say goodbye, and he said, "You were knitting!" Like I'd been dancing naked on the table or something. It was very funny. He obviously considered that I was doing something either incredibly odd or just sort of something you don't do in public. I'm not sure which, and I'm not going to ask, but I found that very funny. And I wondered, you know, I mean, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you're a knitter, unless you're my friend who very kindly agreed to listen to help me sort out technical issues, who's very much not a knitter. So probably, like many of my friends, you don't think twice about knitting in the car if you're waiting somewhere, or if you're on a longish train journey, that sort of thing. It's not a big deal. I sit and knit if I'm waiting at the doctor's surgery, because we can often have a bit of a wait at our surgery. So for me, especially on the basis I'm working on a small project or a small part of a bigger project, like a sleeve or something, I really just don't think about it. But, you know, clearly for many people, it's a highly peculiar thing to be seen doing in public. And we had our knitting group this morning, and I was asking there, do you think it's unusual to see people knitting in public? And we were fairly divided, actually. Some of us thought, no, it's completely normal. I often see people knitting when they're, you know, got time to kill. Other people sort of saying, I never see anybody knit, really, unless I'm here. But I thought that was quite interesting. What do you think? Do people knit in public where you live? While we were at the knitting group this morning, I was asking people if they had managed to do any knitting in public, and it turns out we're quite a multi-skilled bunch. One person was playing her Welsh harp at a medieval festival that we had in town at the weekend, but nonetheless she found time not only for knitting but for medieval knitting. And she had a quick Google of medieval knitting before she set out in the morning, and she was knitting a scarf, and the basic pattern was you knit two rows of garter stitch and then two rows of knit two, purl two. And what was really nice is she was knitting it with Ryland's wool, and Leominster, which is my nearest town, a few miles away, is known for its Ryland's sheep, and I think they were known as Leominster Gold in the Middle Ages, because it's not a particularly affluent town these days, but in the Middle Ages it really was, and it was the wool from these Ryland's sheep. It was very sought after, and we have a number of references to the sheep in the town, including a wonderful metal sculpture which is known, I don't know if it's official, but she's known within the town as Lady Barbar. I've always been rather fond of her. I have got a photograph of her, so I shall try to remember to put that up with the show notes. So, so despite playing her harp, she found time for this medieval knitting. Somebody else was at a reunion. Somebody else was making a jerkin at a workshop, not a leather one, a material one. My mum was otherwise engaged, didn't get round to it, and I managed a little bit of knitting in the evening. But we think we might somehow see if we can manage something next year. I'd really like to, I think as I mentioned before, actually arrange something in the town, and we'll see how that goes. It was this weekend was the medieval pageant, and if it coincides next year, then I think there's some scope for some crossover. It could be very interesting. I've had an invitation to spend a few days with various relatives in the southeast in August. Now, fingers crossed for some decent weather, and I keep seeing at the moment patterns coming up for camisoles. And I did once knit myself a camisole. It was awful. I didn't know a great deal about shaping, and I was following a pattern, but I couldn't particularly relate the information in the pattern to my shape. And I'm reasonably well endowed up top, which can be an issue. Standard sizing is not necessarily going to work for me. So, but I've got these socks to finish. I'll talk about them in a bit. I've also got this shrug to finish, which I have to finish before I even think about doing a camisole, really, because the do that I need the shrug for is 2 weeks before I'm going to need the camisole. But I'm quite interested now, and I've got loads of DK, as I may have mentioned before, but I don't particularly have any summery colours. I've got grey and navy and black, but I'm sure I can source enough DK relatively cheaply to, you know, make myself something for sort of £10 or so, you know, which for a handmade camisole isn't bad. But when I finish these socks, I'm going to reward myself with some time searching for camisole patterns. I have saved quite a few in my library on Pinterest, on Ravelry. I don't know if you use the library feature. It's quite useful if you're hunting about, for instance, for camisole patterns, and you see something which isn't what you want to do now but might have some application in the future. You can just add it to your library and it's just there. You can go back and look another day. And every now and again I go through my library and I kill off things that I just know I'm never going to knit, which helps to keep it manageable. I'm now going to play my interview with Alison, recorded this morning. She had finished her lovely little jacket and she brought it along to show us. It's really nice when people do that, because our knitting group is just once a fortnight, and so you often see something when it's at its most in progress, and sometimes it's almost impossible to visualise how it's going to look when it's in bits or whatever. And it's really nice when people bring along the finished article and you can see what all their endeavours resulted in. And I mentioned before that Alison was struggling with this shaping at the back, so I asked her about that and we talked about the project more generally. So here's Alison. I'm here with Alison talking about the project she's been working on that I've mentioned before. There was a little bit of confusion about what was happening at the back. So, Alison, what made you choose this pattern?
Unfortunately, I don't tend to read patterns closely like a recipe before I start. And I really liked the idea of the sort of double-breasted front for quite a small child on its garter stitch wide bands.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first attraction.
You just liked the style.
I just liked the style before I'd ever looked at the back or how it was going to be put together.
You did what we all do. You barreled in thinking, how hard can it be? And then...
yes.
and then moment, I think, as I recall, was the vent on the back.
That was the first one, yes.
Because you'd already overcome a few obstacles in the pattern.
The pattern came from a magazine, and I have discovered now that there's no point knitting a pattern from a magazine unless you're a fairly confident, experienced knitter, because you have to use your common sense.
Yeah, it's not because they pitch these at an incredibly high standard, it's rather the opposite. You've got to overcome the errors.
There are errors, yes.
Mm. Yeah. So the construction of this, you started at this end, did you? You started at the waist for this back section and worked upwards?
Yes, yeah. Because the sleeves were knitted on double-pointed needles in one. And then I knitted the back, and then I had to join the main body to the sleeves and knit the top.
And in the middle of the back, there's the vent.
Yes.
And the vent was the bogeyman.
Absolutely, because the way that the pattern was... The pattern that I followed and had done all of it had two...
I can just see in there.
What do you call them?
Just little... Little
vents.
Yeah.
But when you came to do the vent at the top, they didn't hang nicely.
Mm.
So I had far too many stitches. So I had to bodge it a little bit.
Oh, so that was a modification of your own?
That was my own modification, because otherwise it would have meant unpicking the whole thing.
Yes. Oh, God.
And working out how to work out the pattern from the rib.
And in order to create this vent, so as you knit it up, you put there these two sort of small elements of rib sort of in the middle of the back, and you got to the top, and you had to divide the stitches, didn't you, onto double pointed needles and start doing something complex at that point.
You had to do in toes of socks.
Kitchener stitch,
yeah.
So that was all... I do remember that being a bit of a challenge. I mentioned it in passing on the podcast before when I was talking about problem solving and the fact that, you know, often, in fact, we do know what it is that we need to do to solve a problem. It's just, it's not until someone else says, I think you need to do X, that you think, yeah, that is what I thought. You just needed to have that, you know, that confidence.
I mean, it's not very beautiful. It wouldn't win a competition. But it has achieved a wearable garment, a very small baby.
It's lovely. The thing that I always bear in mind in these situations is that the recipient doesn't actually know how it's meant to look.
That's true.
Unless you're very unwisely giving something knitted to an expert knitter, you know, the chances are you're going to get away with it. But as you say, it's a lovely little design. It's got these nice sort of proud seams on the front, the garter stitch collar and band. It's very sweet, and I love your cheerful little smiley blue buttons.
I just felt in the pattern there were much bigger buttonholes than the other pattern, and I realized that for this particular size, which is the first size, the 0 to 6 month size, they were far too bulky, the buttonholes for this band. So again, that was another modification. I had to change the size of the
buttonholes. Especially when you think that a young child tends to lurch forward. You don't want a large button that's going to, you know, dig in the middle. But so I'm guessing this is one of those that's not going to become a staple when you hear that someone's expecting a baby.
Absolutely not.
Well, no. Despite all your trials and tribulations, it's turned out beautifully, and I'm sure that the family will be very pleased to receive it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
well as knitting podcasts, do you read any knitting newsletters? I've subscribed to a few over my knitting life, and at the moment the one I receive is Round Table Yarns. I came across Round Table Yarns on Instagram, and I get a newsletter once a week or so, and I've been really struck by basically how we're on the same wavelength. Roundtable Yarns is based in North America. It's interesting, actually. The lady who runs it produces yarns, but you know, she's a knitter, a very expert knitter, and her newsletter, as well as containing information about the yarns she has available, also always includes a tip or a technique. And it's been surprisingly in sync with this podcast. Over the last few weeks, she's included features on SSK, yarnovers, and lifelines. And SSK clearly features very heavily when you're doing raglan. And I was talking about raglan sleeves, and I've mentioned that quite a few times. I could be in danger of having a bit of a bee in my bonnet about it. And also, I've knitted now a number of proper, some not so proper raglan jumpers, and I've done an awful lot of SSK. So that was interesting. She was talking about how it can, how the finished article can look, and coming up with a neater method of doing the SSK. So that's interesting. As with so many of these sorts of newsletters, something comes in and you may not be using that technique right now, but there'll come a point where you might find that information quite useful. The next one that came in was about yarnovers, and it was unfortunately just fractionally too late for me, but I had obviously been looking and needing to know a bit about yarnovers with these lace elements that I've been working with recently, and I really had to start from scratch with what a yarnover really was, because I thought it was actually a whole stitch. So you bring your yarn to the front, knit one. I thought all of that together was what a yarn over was. Well, I realise now that's not the case, but that was interesting. And then lifelines. So what were the chances of that? See, I've talked a lot about lifelines, and I recorded a little extra episode about those, so I'm going to be keeping my eyes peeled. I wouldn't be at all surprised if she talks about Worldwide Knit in Public Day, because you know, everybody's talking about Worldwide Knit in Public Day, so that's quite reasonable. So I recommend the Round Table Yarn newsletters, and I'd love to hear your recommendations as well, as to which newsletters you find just hit the spot for you. You know, also the frequency is right. One or two I've unsubscribed from because I was literally getting an email every single day. And even if they're finding something new to say, I get a bit overwhelmed with that. I don't need that level of input. So I've taken the view that I'm going to unsubscribe from the newsletter, but I know where to go if I'm looking for that sort of information at a later date. I'm not saying never darken my door again. It's just, you know, enough already with the emails. I'll come to you. So between the nature of the information and the frequency, and also how heavily selling it is, because, you know, emails that are 95% selling with a quick tip tacked on the end, that doesn't really do a lot for me. You know, I will go looking if I want to buy something. When I started this podcast series, I was very heavily into baby knitting because people were pregnant left, right and centre. In fact, we've all been doing a lot of baby knitting at my knitting group, a couple of us for the same person and somebody else for, or in fact, some of us for the same two people and somebody else for someone who they know that we don't know. And at last, babies have started to arrive. The little girl that I made the sleep pod for in the cream, blue and pink has arrived, and I've passed on the baby pod through my mum, who sees this person more than I do. So I'm very much hoping that I'm going to get to see this little girl in her pod. But she's about 2 weeks old now, I think, and I do have vague memories of what it's like to have a 2-week-old baby, and I don't think I was going very far at that stage. apparently she's a smallish baby. I don't think she was quite 7 pounds, so she should fit into that sleep pod for a while. And here in the UK, the weather has been pretty underwhelming the last week or 10 days. So all of a sudden, an Aran sleep pod really doesn't actually, you know, doesn't seem as daft as I thought it was going to. This morning I was sitting, because the light wasn't very good, it's so gloomy and dark today and threatening rain, that sitting in the middle of this room, which has a fabulous chandelier, which unfortunately is doesn't actually shed much light, I went to sit by the window to knit these socks because I couldn't really see what I was doing, and the window had been opened, but actually I was slightly chilly. Which brings me on to talking about these socks. I'm starting to feel like they're never going to go away. Quite frankly, and I'm amazed, I haven't enjoyed knitting these as much as I was expecting to. And I think it's because I found them very repetitive. The yarn is a block colour. It's a nice colour and it's a nice yarn, but it's a block colour. There's no striping, there's no fleck, there's no nothing. The pattern is a very straightforward rib. I think it's knit 3, purl 2. And so obviously the sole is flat stocking stitch, the top has been rib from once I'd finished the toe, and now I'm on the cuff, I'm on the 1x1 rib, and it just feels so repetitive. And I'm disappointed because I love doing socks, so I think when it comes to doing the second pair that I bought the yarn for in this lovely forest green, I'm just going to have to include some element of pattern that's a little bit more exciting than a rib, because I know it's got to be halfway house between how my husband likes his socks to fit and what I like to knit, but right now I just couldn't face going into another pair of socks. You know, I love the idea of continuing with the shrug, which has got a little bit of lace and there's going to be some shaping around the back. And then if I do go on to knit myself a camisole, there's clearly going to be shaping and possibly some aspect of lace or patterning in that. And I'm looking forward to that. It's not the mindless knitting. That was the pleasure this morning, actually, as I could actually knit and talk, which is quite unusual. You know, so often I come back from my knitting group and I'm saying, oh, you know, had to rip everything out because I can't knit complicated stuff and talk. So that has been one of the advantages. But I'm going to be actually quite glad to get them done. And then at least I know I've done some and I can save the next set, the next pair of socks for later on in the year. I think that's pretty much all I had to talk about this week. I hope you're enjoying your knitting. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram, and I look forward to talking to you again next week and hearing from you. Thanks, bye.